Brothers sometimes express their pain, saying, why don't my family members understand the significance of Wilayat al-Faqih? Why is it that people are still confused about, you know, whether politics is a part of religion or not? If the people don't know, is it not the fault of the ulama, the scholars of Islam? While there are many decent ulama out there, may Allah bless each and every one of them, what we've done is we've created a structure where many ulama refrain from doing amr bil ma'roof wa nahy anil munkar, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. Many ulama have become employees, not leaders, and as a result, they tell the people what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. If talking about prayers and fasting, having good akhlaq, being kind to people makes the people nod and say, mashallah, look how knowledgeable that scholar is. But when you talk about Palestine, when you talk about Yemen, when you talk about America being the enemy of Islam, of Muslims, and of humanity in general, people turn around and say, oh, that's just politics. When you talk about Iran or the Islamic Republic, then people turn around and say, oh, that's just politics. Stay out of that. No, brothers and sisters, when the Holy Prophet says one who wakes up in the morning and is not concerned with the affairs of the Muslims is not a Muslim, we have to recheck, reanalyze what we think Islam is. Did the Holy Prophet not stand against the Quraysh and the tribal leaders of his time? Did Imam Ali not fight against the Khawarij, the Da'ish of his time? Did Imam Hassan not expose and confront the Muawiyah of his time? And because of the betrayal of the elites and scholars of his faction, was forced to sign a peace treaty with Muawiyah? Did Imam Hussein not rise up against the Yazid of his time? And will Imam Mahdi not rid the world of all injustice of our time? In fact, every Imam to the point of his martyrdom opposed and exposed the tyrants of their time. Some ulama, although very few in number, do resist against the enemies of Islam. They at least attempt to show the people the realities of America, Israel, and UK. But these ulama, may Allah bless each and every one of them, are often sidelined, silenced, and oppressed. People say, oh, he's just too political. Oh, he's just a troublemaker. Oh, he's just too extreme. Inshallah, we're going to share something with you today that perhaps most Muslims have never even heard of. It is the sermon of Imam Hussein to the scholars of his time, revealing to us the roles, responsibilities, and duties of the ulama, i.e. the scholars of Islam. Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Holy Prophet, says, O people, take lesson from the counsel God gave to his friends when he rebuked the rabbis by saying, why do the scholars and rabbis not forbid their sinful talk and consumption of what is unlawful? Truly what they have done is evil. And he says, cursed by the tongue of David and Jesus, son of Mary, are those among the children of Israel who disbelieved on account of their rebellion and transgression. They did not prevent each other from committing vile and corrupt acts. Surely what they did was abominable. God reproached them because they saw with their own eyes the oppressors committing vile and corrupt acts, but did not stop them. Out of love for the favors they received from them, as well as fear of persecution and injury. However, God says, fear not men, but fear me. And he says, the believing men and women are friends and protectors to each other. They enjoin the good and forbid the evil. They perform the prayer and pay the alms and obey God and his messenger. Even if we do nahy anil munkar, forbidding the evil, on a societal level, we tell sisters to observe hijab, we tell brothers not to sell drugs, we tell people to not steal. That's all great and it has to be done. But what about nahy anil munkar on a global level? Why are we not exposing some governments for their agenda against hijab? Why are we not crying out against nations that are selling drugs, NGOs that steal from other nations? Are these two not our duties? Imam Khomeini has even written an exposition of this sermon. He was one of the true ulama, inshallah, because he taught the spiritual sciences of Islam, he implemented the Islamic jurisprudence, and he did nahy anil munkar against the oppressors of his time. Imam Hussein continues, God mentions the duty of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil before all other duties, because he knows that if it is performed and is established in society, all other duties, the easy and the difficult, will also become established. The reason for this is that amr bil ma'roof wa nahy anil munkar means summoning people to Islam, as well as resistance against injustice, opposing and struggling against oppressors, and and endeavouring to ensure that public wealth and income derived from war are distributed in accordance with the just laws of Islam, and that taxes are collected, levied, and expended in due and proper form. To all those who think that scholars should stay out of politics, do you think that was Imam Hussein's view? Struggling against oppressors and endeavouring to ensure public wealth, collecting taxes, Imam Hussein is telling the scholars that it is their duty to do these things. To those who think that governance should only be in the hands of the infallible imams, do you think this was Imam Hussein's view? Or does he tell the scholars to take control and to lead the community culturally, economically, ideologically, and politically? Why then are so many scholars sitting on the fence when they can see with their own eyes injustices taking place home and abroad? And there are many methodologies, styles, and approaches for carrying out this duty, but the question is, why are a number of scholars not doing anything at all? Imam Hussein continues, "O scholars who are celebrated and enjoy good repute on account of your learning, you have achieved a good name in society because of your goodwill. It is on account of God that men venerate you and stand in awe of you. When the people do not receive their due, they seek your intercession, and you walk in the street with the majesty of kings and princes." Brothers and sisters, we have to be very careful about who we look up to as an alim, a true scholar of Islam. There are many scholars and public speakers out there who are shown vast amounts of respect. We kiss their hands. We stand up for them when they enter the room. Imam Hussein says, "Have you not earned all this respect and prestige because of the people's hopes that you will implement God's laws, even though in most instances you have failed to do so?" Yes, there may be some scholars who are the most eloquent of speakers. This does not necessarily make them an alim of Islam. There may be some scholars who have impressive amounts of knowledge. This again does not necessarily make them an alim of Islam. If you want to know who the true alim of Islam is, then look for those who do Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahy anil Munkar. Imam Hussein says, "Amr bil ma'ruf wa nahy anil munkar means summoning people to Islam, as well as resistance against injustice, opposing and struggling against oppressors." What bigger oppression do we know of in contemporary history than Palestine? What about Yemen, Iraq, Bahrain, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Kashmir? What about Myanmar? If we want to know who qualifies to be an alim in the eyes of Imam Hussein, perhaps we need to look at those who stand boldly against oppression, whether militarily, culturally, academically, economically, or ideologically. Not those who may have the most marvelous of lectures to preach about the lifestyle of the prophets and imams, but when they are asked how to implement the resistance of the prophets and imams in contemporary society, they turn around and say, "Oh, don't worry about that, that's just politics." Have such scholars not neglected a major part of the deen of Islam? "You have taken lightly your duties as leaders. You have neglected the rights of the oppressed and the lowly, but have assiduously pursued what you regard as your personal rights. You have not spent your money or risked your life for the sake of the one who gave you life, nor have you fought against any group or tribe for the sake of God." Anybody can memorize some verses of the Holy Quran, learn some hadith, put on a turban, start giving public lectures about the history and the akhlaq of the Ahlul Bayt, and earn some cash from the people. What's difficult is to spend one's own hard-earned money for the sake of Allah. What's difficult is to risk one's own life for the sake of Islam. Nobody said it was supposed to be easy. You think it's easy to become the inheritors of the legacy of all the divine messengers? You want to know who struggled? Look at people like Sheikh Zakzaki, standing against Zionism. He didn't just study in the holy city of Qom, he fearlessly implemented what he learned, and millions responded to the message. Look at Sheikh Nimr, standing boldly against the Saudi regime. Look at Shahid Mutahiri, look at Shahid Baqir al-Sadr, Imam Musa al-Sadr, Shahid Abbas Musavi, Shahid Baqir al-Hakim, Shahid Arif Husseini, Shahid Behishti. Look at Ayatollah Sistani, look at Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, Imam Khomeini, look at Imam Khamenei. Are these not the people that fit Imam Hussein's criteria for what constitutes an alim? Look at them, and then look at us. I'm ashamed. You want to know why people are generally confused? It's because most scholars have not taken up the burden of resistance and have taken their duties lightly. It is easy to preach to people that Shaytan exists and that he is Aduwwun Mubin, he is our manifest enemy. What's difficult is to point the finger at the USA and say, this is the great Satan, the physical manifestation of that enemy. This is shedding our bloods on the battlefield. This is stunting us in our economics. This is culturally infecting us. This is ideologically campaigning against us. Forget about physically or economically fighting back. We are not even prepared to recognize the enemy for what it is, let alone make others aware. As a result, there's Muslims out there who still trust American and British news outlets. There's Muslims out there who are yet being indoctrinated by American and British movies and mainstream media. There's Muslims out there who still trust the Western education system to practically raise their children. Then they see their children going astray and wonder, where did I go wrong? Were the scholars not supposed to spend their money and risk their lives for the sake of Allah in order to make it clear to people who the enemy is in order to oppose this oppression? But we didn't. Imam Hussein continues, nevertheless you desire and regard it as your due that he should grant you paradise, the company of the Prophet, and security from chastisement in the hereafter. You have such expectations of God. I fear that the full weight of his wrath descend upon you. For although it is by his might and glory that you have achieved high rank, you show no respect to those who truly know God, while you yourselves enjoy respect among God's creatures on his account. Who are those who truly know God? Are they not those who are out there spending their wealth, risking their lives, sacrificing their families, their career paths, and their dreams so that they can defend the shrine of Sayyidah Zainab? Are they not those who, for the sake of Allah and his prophets and his imams, are out there defending the rights of the Muslims, Sunni and Shia alike? When Hezbollah, which is nothing but a legitimate resistance against the Zionist, racist, apartheid entity of Israel, can be branded as a terrorist organization by the pharaohs of our time, should we not have supported Hezbollah? Are the courageous soldiers of Hezbollah not giving their blood for the sake of Allah? Then why are they rarely mentioned from the pulpits? Why are so many Muslims indifferent to the struggles of their brothers and sisters who are out there striving for the cause of Imam Mahdi? Are Hamas not fighting with everything they have to oppose the tyranny of Israel? Are these not oppressed? Is over 4,000 mu'mineen from Pakistan going to fight for the defense of Sayyidah Zainab in Syria against the American-backed Daesh? Is this not a great honor worthy of mentioning? Should the Muslims not be aware of the fact that just like Hezbollah, we now have a faction named Zainabiyun with the same stance as Hezbollah? Why do the majority of Muslims not even know that there is an army from Afghanistan known as the Fatimiyun who are mu'mineen, who are prepared to lay down their lives for the sake of this resistance? Some come forward and say, oh, I follow Ayatollah Sistani. That stuff's got nothing to do with me. What are you talking about? They try and paint this picture that Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani are on different wavelengths, when in reality, they are on the exact same path when it comes to resisting the enemies of Islam. When Imam Khamenei on the 6th of December 2017 says, today the Pharaoh is America, today the Pharaoh is the Zionist regime, and the very next day Ayatollah Sistani denounces and condemns the USA for its decision to name Jerusalem the capital of Israel, what does this show you? Ayatollah Sistani said, Jerusalem is an occupied land that should return to the sovereignty of its Palestinian owners no matter how long it takes. The efforts of the Ummah ought to be combined and their voices should be united in this struggle. When Ayatollah Sistani passes a fatwa and makes it wajib, compulsory, to defend Iraq from American-backed Daesh, why is this not being talked about? Sunnis and Shias alike in Iraq, in a faction known as Hashd al-Sha'bi, they are resisting. Brothers and sisters, I am afraid for us because we talk so much about preparing for the zuhur of Imam Mahdi, but I feel that the armies of Imam Mahdi may already be formed and we are not even aware. We don't even know. And some of us don't even want to know. Why? Because that's just politics. As Imam Khomeini once said, one who thinks that religion and politics are separate understands neither politics nor religion. Imam Hussein continues, I am also afraid for you for another reason. You see the covenant enacted with God being violated and trampled underfoot, yet you show no anxiety. When it comes to the covenants enacted with your fathers, you become greatly disturbed and anxious if they are only violated in part. But the pledges you have made to the most noble messenger are a matter of complete indifference to you. Oh scholars, this indifference is killing the Ummah. Those Muslims out there who are struggling, and it's not just on military battlefields, it's a cultural resistance, an economic resistance, distance,
ideologically and politically.
They are our brothers and sisters.
This is one ummah. When they are branded as terrorists, when they are called radicals or extremists, it should hurt us.
I'm not even saying that we should join those armies or that we should provide material support. Why are we not even vocalizing our support?
Why are we not even letting Muslims know the realities?
When we see the rights of people to live free are being trampled underfoot, why do we not show any anxiety when these genuine resistance movements who are defending the rights of the innocent people are branded as terrorists?
The enemy is trying to paint the resistance fighters with the same brush as the Taliban, Al-Qaeda and Daesh,
when in reality the USA, Israel and UK created and promoted these deviant groups. And now they use words like terrorist, extremist and radicalism to shut the mouths of those who are on the path of true resistance.
The truth is that because of the USA, UK, Saudi Arabia and Israel, the entire world is suffering. They are creating terrorism and they are the real terrorists.
The Taliban, Al-Qaeda and Daesh are nothing but useful tools for the real enemy. But their reign of terror is coming to an end.
Hezbollah, Hamas in Palestine, the Zainabiyun of Pakistan, the Fatimiyun of Afghanistan, the Hashd al-Sha'bi in Iraq, the Kata'ib Hezbollah and the An-Nujba of Iraq, the Houthis in Yemen, and the Revolutionary Guard of Iran are striving with everything they have to obliterate these terrorists once and for all,
inshallah, and end all the suffering of people globally.
Is it not our duty as scholars to at least make people aware of these things?
Imam Hussein continues, the blind, the dumb, the chronically ill everywhere lack protection in towns and no mercy is shown to them, but you neither behave in accordance with your function and rank, nor do you support or pay any regard to those who do. You purchase your safety from the oppressive ruling powers with flattery, cajolery, and compromise.
Forget resisting against the oppressive powers. Some scholars purchase their safety and sustenance from the hegemonic governments.
If we talk about this subject, our charity status will be revoked and we won't get funds anymore.
If I don't humble myself in front of the UK and America and comply to their standards of morality, I might get kicked out of the country.
If I speak out against this, I might be imprisoned.
We're more worried about our green card or our citizenship or our PR card or our personal social standing than the cause of Allah.
I'm not even saying that these things in themselves are wrong, but if we're doing these things for personal reasons rather than Islam, that's the problem. And unfortunately, the majority of the times, that's the case.
Imam Hussein reminds us of the Holy Quran, which says, fear not men, but fear me.
Yet we preach this to people but don't follow it.
One might raise the question, well, every Imam didn't rise up against the tyrant of his time like Imam Hussein did. What about Imam Naqi? What about Imam Taqi? They didn't struggle against oppression, right?
Wrong. Read the history. Every single Imam opposed and exposed the tyrants and oppressors of their time using different methodologies and strategies. But the struggle was always there.
Tell me an Imam who was not threatened or martyred or imprisoned. Tell me an Imam who was not ostracized.
Tell me a prophet or Imam who was not called mad.
Isn't it their path we're supposed to be following? Isn't that the Sirat al-Mustaqim? If we don't follow their path, how can we expect others to follow their path?
Some scholars come forward and say, oh, people aren't ready to hear this stuff.
I refuse to accept that.
Sheikh Zakzaki delivers the message to Nigeria, the message of Islam, of resistance, of following Imam Khamenei, of Wilayatul Faqih, of standing for the rights of the oppressed, and opposition to Israel.
His family became oppressed, his sons became martyrs, and he was imprisoned.
And because of that courage, millions of people become Muslims on the path of resistance.
That's how ready the people of the world are. They want this message. People deserve this message. All we have to do is deliver it to them.
People want liberty in the true sense of the word, not the warped interpretation America has given it.
People know that the world we live in is a dark, dystopian, devilish, dangerous world. They want change. People are inherently good. They want justice. They want divinity, spirituality, and they want to be free.
We have failed to deliver the simple message of pure Muhammadan Islam to the world.
Some come forward and say, we will prepare for Imam Mahdi by avoiding the major sins and spiritually elevating.
Ayatollah Dasghayb, in his book Greater Sins, lists not helping the oppressed as the 30th greater sin.
And Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq says that this is of the greater sin.
And we wonder why we're not spiritually elevating.
Brothers and sisters, if we are not helping the oppressed, then we are committing a major sin every day of our lives.
Nahy an al-Munkar, forbidding the evil, is not even happening on a societal level.
For example, if there is a public speaker, it doesn't matter how famous, how popular, and how influential they may be. If an individual goes against
the unity of Muslims and the stance of Wali al-Faqih and the Maraji', such an individual should be called out. This is Nahi anil Munkar. But then, some scholars come forward in solidarity to show their support for this individual and to condemn the one who is doing the Nahi anil Munkar. The Holy Prophet says, it is necessary to help a believer, whether he is an oppressor or an oppressed one. If he is an oppressor, he should be restrained from oppression. And if he is an oppressed one, he should be helped to obtain his rights. Why was this person not restrained from the oppression they were causing their own souls? If you loved them truly, you would restrain them, not come out in solidarity to support them and oppose the one who was condemning such actions. Dear scholars, with all due respect, we appreciate that you have taken up the responsibility of preaching Islam, but we feel we also have a duty to stand up for the established principles of Islam when we see them violated by anyone, even if they are a public speaker or scholar. You came out in solidarity to defend somebody who had clearly done something wrong, but where was your solidarity when for years so-called scholars were making a mockery out of the Shia school of thought and creating hatred between Muslims? Where was your solidarity against the Saudi prince who so boldly walks freely in the lands while Yemeni children are dying of starvation because of him? Where is your solidarity against Israel when Gaza is bombed? And where will your solidarity be when the little girl is raised on the Day of Judgment saying, "For what crime was I killed?" and the bullet in her heart was paid for by your taxes while you did next to nothing to defend her rights? Back to the sermon, where Imam Hussein talks about purchasing our safety from the oppressive ruling powers with flattery, cajolery, and compromise. He says, all these activities have been forbidden to you by God, and He has moreover commanded you to forbid each other from engaging in them. But you pay no attention. The calamity that has befallen you is greater than that which has befallen others. For the true rank and degree of ulama has been taken away from you. The administration of the country and the issuing of decrees and ordinances should actually be entrusted to religious scholars who are the guardians of God's ordinances concerning what is permitted and what is forbidden. But your position has been usurped from you for no other reason than that you have abandoned the truth, al-haq, and have disagreed about the nature of the Sunnah, despite the existence of clear proofs. If Wilayatul Faqih is indeed a theory, then was it not theorized by the grandson of the Holy Prophet himself? I'm not talking about the nitty-gritty details, I'm talking purely about the fact that instead of a tyrant ruler, a conditions-fulfilling mujtahid should be governing not only the society, but the entire world through the divine just laws of Allah, in the absence of an infallible imam. Let me repeat, the administration of the country and the issuing of decrees and ordinances should actually be trusted to religious scholars who are guardians of God's ordinances concerning what is permitted and what is forbidden. If we can see that the Waliul Faqih, a conditions-fulfilling jurist, is doing that, regardless of whether we understand the minor details or not, is it not our duty to at least not confuse people about it? And yet we see scholars taking people on ziyara trips to visit Imam Hussein. We see people preaching about Imam Hussein, making people cry about Imam Hussein, which is all great, it needs to be done, it will continue inshallah. But how could we so audaciously hide away the spirit of Imam Hussein from the people? How could we so audaciously prevent people from understanding the revolutionary spirit of Imam Hussein, the spirit of resistance against tyranny? And then we sit back and wonder, why are the youths becoming so disconnected? Why are people becoming secularized? We preach about how Islam has the solution to all the world's problems, cultural, economic, social, political, Islam has the solutions. But then we fail to present those solutions to people. Why? Because we are afraid of resisting the solutions provided by the enemy. Imam Hussein continues, had you the forbearance to endure adversities and hardships for the sake of God, then all proposed regulations, God's affairs, would be brought to you for your approval and for you to issue. Authority would lie in your hands, but you allowed the oppressors to take away your functions and God's affairs, i.e. the government, to fall into their hands, so that they administer them by resorting to ambiguities and make arbitrariness and the satisfaction of lust their consistent practice. What enabled them to gain control of government was your fleeing in panic from inevitable death and your love of life, which shall in all certainty depart from you. As a consequence of that mentality, you have delivered the powerless masses into the clutches of the oppressors. Just as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah puts it, the world today is divided into two camps, not the Shia and the Sunni, not the Muslims and the non-Muslims, not the religious and the non-religious. It is divided into the camp of the oppressor and the camp of the oppressed. Which camp are you in?
Imam Hussein continues, while some cringe like slaves under the yokes of oppressors and others have been reduced to destitution in regards to their livelihood, the rulers run the affairs of the government in accordance with their whims. The people are their slaves and are powerless to defend themselves. One of the governors is a dictator by nature, malevolent and rancorous. Another represses to recognize either God or the Day of Resurrection. It is not strange. How can one think it is strange that society is in the clutches of a cunning oppressor whose tax collectors are oppressors and whose governors feel no compassion or mercy towards the believers under rule? Forget protesting, forget facing bullets, forget going out there and facing the cold hard rain. We can't even use social media, sitting in the comfort of our own homes, to show our support for the oppressed. When Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the chief of the resistance, has to come out and tell us to condemn Trump and the Zionists on social media websites and says, "With all simplicity, and I tell you, this is the puniest action, our minutest obligation, that every man, woman, boy and girl daily across the Arab and Islamic nations and across the world takes a stance or expresses their stance on the social media websites. The least, the puniest thing that we could do is get ourselves on social media and support the oppressed there. But we're not even doing that. Some people come forward and say, I will only do something when Imam Mahdi returns. Brother, this was the same mentality of the people of Kufa. They said, we won't listen to Muslim ibn Aqil, we only obey the infallible Imam. And because of this mentality, Imam Hussein was martyred. If you don't stand with Imam Mahdi when he is in the Ghaybah, by identifying the Muslim ibn Aqil of your time, then how are you going to be with Imam Mahdi when he reappears? Some people yet try to put this all down to just politics. Brothers and sisters, it is not merely politics. This is not merely a struggle for political power or a power struggle, as some people try to put it. This is Islam. Imam Hussein continues, Oh God, you know that everything we did was not prompted by rivalry for political power, nor for a search for wealth and abundance. Rather, it was done to demonstrate to men the shining principles and values of your religion, to reform the affairs of your land, to protect and secure the indisputable rights of your oppressed servants, and to act in accordance with the duties you have established and the norms, laws, and ordinances you have decreed. Brothers and sisters, you must know that this terrible world that we are living in today is about to change, that Imam Mahdi is going to fill the world with justice just as it is now filled with injustice, and that you have a role to play in this. Brothers and sisters, identify the true ulama. Identify them and latch onto them. And if your local scholar is not telling you about the affairs of the Muslims, then pressurize them. Ask them why. Demand to know what's really going down in the Muslim world. Ask them about Palestine, ask them about Gaza, ask them about Iraq, ask them about Bahrain. Gauge where they stand. If they try giving you a wishy-washy answer, or they try telling you, oh, I'm not really sure, then ask them why not. The time has come for us to recognize the foes and recognize the friends. The time has come to wake up, and wake up now. Some people just can't believe that Israel will actually fall. It will fall. And with it, this entire hegemonic, colonialist, imperialist system of America, the UK, and Saudi Arabia will come crashing down with it. Back in 2015, Imam Khamenei said, by Allah's favor and grace, nothing called the Zionist regime will exist 25 years from now. That gives the Zionist regime until 2040 max. And when he says something, by the grace of Allah, it always comes true. Even the enemies know that, and that's why they're panicking. Today, Hezbollah is fighting, Hamas is fighting, the Zainabiyun is fighting, the Fatimiyun is fighting, Hashd al-Sha'bi is fighting, the Houthis in Yemen are fighting, and the Revolutionary Guard is fighting. They are all resisting. The clock is ticking for America, the clock is ticking for the UK, the clock is ticking for Saudi Arabia, and the countdown has begun for Israel. The world that the generations after us will inherit will be a world of equity, of balance, of respect, of love, and of perpetual peace. Inshallah. So, O scholars of the religion, you are to help us to reach this goal. Win back our rights from those powers who have considered it acceptable to wrong you and who have attempted to put out the light kindled by your prophet. God suffices us, upon him do we rely, and to him shall we return.
Wherever you are. Ayyuha as-sahayina, in aradtumuha harban maftuha, فلتكن حربا مفتوحة. حزب الله والمقاومة الإسلامية
في أتم الجهوزية لمواجهة أي عدوان محتمل.